You're listening to the Denver Real Estate Investing Podcast, where it's all about helping you grow your Denver real estate portfolio. Here's your host, Chris Lopez.
Hey, everyone. Chris Lopez here, and welcome back to our second episode in nine-part series on ADUs. So we literally just finished wrapping up the first one about 5 minutes ago before we hit record on this one. So I've got my two guests back with me. I've got Jeff Baker. So Jeff, welcome back.
Thank you.
5 minutes. And Matt Komnek is a realtor around town. Matt, welcome back. Glad to have you here.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, guys. So we are going to keep it short. And just a reminder for everyone, or short on the intro, I should say, if you guys need to catch up previous ones, notes, future episodes, go to denverinvestmentrealestate.com/ADU. And I'll put all the notes up there. It'll kind of be a living, breathing page for next 6 weeks while I do all these webinars. So Jeff, Matt, you guys got the keyboard in front of us to control the PowerPoint slides. So tell us what we're talking about today.
Yeah, we're going to get into a little bit of pre-planning, design and permitting, a little bit more detail than we gave on the first one. We'll talk details about that. Tell you a little bit, if you missed the first one, who ADU for you is. We are a modern carriage house builder. We educate, advocate, and build. We are working to push ADU movement forward through these efforts. And we give homeowners an unexpected and exceptional ADU building experience. Going on to the next slide, design and permitting. I'll let Matt go ahead and talk.
Yeah, this is kind of your first step, you know, dipping your toes in the water. The biggest thing we're seeing right now is people are interested about ADUs. They're excited about them. But, the most common question we get is, are we zoned for it? And that varies by neighborhood, that varies by city, that varies by county. That's one of the big questions. So, you know, Denver has a decent site that tells you, gives you some insight on the permitting or on the zoning, and Jeffco, but there's still a lot of question. It's pretty convoluted. The biggest thing is we have people reach out to us all the time. So we would say, reach out to us anytime you want and we can tell you if you zone for it. If you are and you want to move forward, the next kind of step is getting a conceptual rendering. So what that means is, we sit you down with our architect, we look at your, we look at your property, we look at your plat map, we look, whether we need to have an attached unit or a detached unit over the garage and kind of look at the setbacks. And we get this architect involved in, kind of drawing your vision of what you want to have on your property, what you see it looking like, how big you think it should be, windows, things like that. So, that's like, your part to kind of put a stamp on, your property if that's what you're wanting to do. And typically we're telling people they cost, about $1,000 to get that conceptual rendering design. And even from that, so that gives you a picture of where you can go, so it's kind of a base level entry to, $1,000 can show you the potential of your property and your potential ADU.
And so what we're looking at here is this is a conceptual design of what we're looking at here or one image of one, because this is the front view with everything's labeled and just a lot of dimensions on there for vertical or horizontal dimensions and lots of labeling.
Correct. So this is actually my house and that is the main house. And that's going to be a two-phase project where we're going to build the ADU first. And there's an image in a later slide that shows the
side
of the ADU.
So this is not the ADU.
That is not the ADU. Okay. That is the main house. And the ADU will be behind that. But what this does show on here, which a lot of people run into, is that bulk plane. So that bulk plane goes up 10 feet and then in 45 degrees. And this is where much of the zoning code in Denver prohibits or restricts the ability to build a two-story ADU on the back
of
the property.
Sorry, you said
bulk plane. Yep.
Like B-U-L-K.
B-U-L-K.
What is that again exactly?
You can see right on the top of that schematic drawing, it says bulk plane. And so you can see what that's pointing to is that line that looks like a house that's built over the property. And so your bulk plane is an area that you cannot penetrate into without variances. And in many places, the back part of the property has that bulk plan requirement. And so when, if you look at that bulk plan and you go to a second story, you try and put a garage with a second story on top of it, the second story is going to basically be a hallway to fit in that bulk plan. So that's one of the biggest issues that's stopping people from building ADUs in Denver is this bulk plan requirement on the back half of the property. So my house is in Curtis Park. Curtis Park actually has an overlay to the zoning code, which allows you to eliminate the bulk plan on the back half of the property. So we still do have to obey by the bulk plan on the front of the house here. You know, the dormers that were previously put in are they're in the bulk plan area. So they're outside of the bulk plan area, I should say. So they are not in the right area, but because they were grandfathered in, those are okay. But the back of the property is where you have the concern. Since we don't have the bulk plan restrictions, we can go up to 24 feet with a flat roof garage and get a full living space. If you think about that bulk plan requirement, try and stack a second level in that bulk plan, you can't do it. You literally get like a hallway on the second floor because you have to be inside that zone there.
Why do they have this?
That's just a zoning requirement. Okay. And basically that has to do with height restrictions and being overbearing on your neighbors, being taller than the front unit potentially. So that's just one of the zoning requirements that's in the current zoning law. So one thing I did want to mention about the architect is you should get somebody and ask them questions about their experience. If you're in a historic district, make sure that they've worked with the Landmark Commission before, because that's some extra hurdles. And if they've never done it, you don't want to be the guinea pig learning experience for them learning how to go through Landmark with your plans, especially if you're a homeowner developer, you don't know how to do it either. So that's a good thing to ask and to see if they have experience with small spaces. There's a gentleman that we work with for our architecture that does, he specializes in small spaces and has won multiple awards for small spaces. And that's the kind of person that understands what you'll need to do to get through some of this stuff. So,
yeah. So with these, I mean, think tiny house, efficiency, small spaces, with big design, essentially, big windows, things like that, bring more light in to vaulted ceilings to make the house look bigger. So, these are a lot of things that, you can talk to your architect about, but, also it helps to have that experience because these are unique properties and they are unique projects. So, having someone that can kind of hold your hand through that process really helps, down the line and saves you money in the end because, Jeff had a problem with an architect, a year ago and he can't use his plans. So, finding someone with experience in these small places and experience with the Landmark District is a big, big thing that you need to look to.
So how long, we talked earlier about timeline for building things. Where are you at in the timeline of this, Jeff, if you don't mind sharing?
So right now I'm taking these Landmark, actually have a meeting with the city on Friday. So I'm going into the zoning department with my Landmark Commission approved plans and going to sit there and say, what needs to be changed on this? Can we fit within the way these are drawn? Because if we have to go change the look of the building to accommodate for something in zoning, that's a start over.
So you have to go back before then go through Landmark
again. So that's what we're trying to avoid.
Yeah, yeah.
With this. So I've got a meeting with him just to see if there's, it's a lot of that has to do with the variances and that can be a crapshoot. Like I'm trying to do this with variances. And so I kind of want somebody that's really experienced with ADUs at the zoning department to say, yeah, you're going to get those and we can build this. Let's do it with the way it's drawn rather than changing that. So that's where I am.
And how many months are you? Just if you don't mind sharing.
I kind of put it on hold for a while.
Okay.
I got a little frustrated with the last designer and design build company that I was working with that said, you're not going to get these approved. And then they never really contacted me. So it was a little bit of a frustration. But so I actually put it on hold until I just kind of picked it back up again. I was focusing on some other things. So those plans are approved for 3 years. So I got some time to get them through. But I want to break ground this summer. That's the goal. So, and what we'll do on our website is that project starts moving along and we start getting new, the construction drawings and stuff drawn, we'll put that up on our website, and that's something we can share with you too, Chris, and
cool.
kind
okay.
of follow that project.
Yeah.
The idea would also to be have a camera on site, and we'll do that on all of our projects to have put together a little time lapse at the end. You can see the project get built out.
Oh, yeah. Very cool.
So let's see, we talked about conceptual, schematic drawing. So that's just the next step of the drawings beyond your conceptual that will have all your construction, your mechanical, your electric, and your plumbing all put into there. And that, those would be plans that would be ready to go to the zoning department. And we talked about variances in the last one, but those are going to be, if you have certain setbacks or anything like that that need to be addressed, or you're in the setback with your current building, you're going to need to go to Board of Adjustments, and you've got to submit your plans to zoning, get official denial before you can go to the Board of Adjustments and get on their schedule to go to their hearing. And that's a crapshoot. They may say yes, they may say no. So something to consider. If you go through the Board of Adjustments, that could be an additional 6 months on your timeline. So do you say, I'm just going to scrape my existing garage rather than trying to reuse this and start from scratch and just build within the zoning code? So that's something to think about.
Okay.
And then your design, bid, and build is typically how it's done. So you'll have an architect design it, you'll have a general contractor bid it, and then you build the project. Anything to add, Matt? All right, go on to the next. Kind of hit the three to six month timeline on design and permitting, but you got to be kind of quick on that, because if you're not answering and responding to the architect as these changes are going through, then that can be stretched out a little bit more. But hopefully, you know, if you could get your drawings done and submit to zoning in 3 months, then hopefully they can turn it around in 3 months to get your permits. And that's another time. That's another place where timing can be extended out. If your architect doesn't know what's going on and they're not fixing everything the first time zoning sends back the requested changes, and then it goes back and they send back the same requested changes again, and your architect's having to redraw it. The goal is to get all the requested changes at once and do it in one redraw.
Yeah.
And then resubmit. But
I mean, I can't imagine there's a ton of architects familiar with ADU zoning rules in Denver.
No.
Okay. So you're there's correct. Probably a handful and...
Yeah. And some of them that have... I would say the majority of them have probably done... If they've done them, it's been like here or there. It's just been like a random thing. It wasn't that they were seeking out to build ADUs. The architect that we're working with is kind of seeking out to grow that market. So...
Oh, good.
That's really exciting because... And he's been awarded for small spaces. So it fits right up what he's already doing.
That's cool. Okay.
So, some additional considerations, Matt, do you want to touch on some of these?
So, I mean, the biggest thing is, you know, these are expensive units. You know, the potential for equity in your home is huge. The potential for rental income is huge. So, you know, there could be a great asset to, you know, you as a homeowner or an investor. But initially you definitely need some cash. So, you know, just to get it started, you know, we're saying $1,000 for renderings, just to get it, you know, to the architect and builder site with the engineers and architect like that. We're saying probably renderings to get it approved, we're looking more like $5,000 to $10,000. So you definitely need some cash to at least get the, you know, this party started. So,
and Matt, that's before you even start the loan process or the interest cash you're paying to see if it's feasible.
That is correct.
Okay.
So, you know, that's just to get this going.
So $10,000 is just a good ballpark number, you would say? I mean, just as a good estimate?
Yeah, probably so.
No, I would agree with that.
Okay.
But, you know, as we said, each property is unique. And, you know, every project varies and, you know, size definitely increases some of the costs and complexity and things like that. So, you know, we'd like to say $10,000 is just kind of a baseline right now. But with that, other things like, you know, discussing how much do you want to be involved with the architecture? How much do you want to be involved with the building? As Jeff said, the more responsive you are, the quicker this can happen. And, you know, how particular are also, you know, refining plans and asking for, you know, bigger windows or sliding glass doors, things like that. So, you know, like he said on the first change plans, it would be nice not to have, you know, more change orders than necessary. So that plays in the timeline and some of the cash that you may need.
Yeah. And then, you know, there are other potential cash upfront things, like if you need structural engineer to do a plan to see if you can reuse an existing building. So there are some things that will come in, and that does typically come out of the, it's usually budgeted into the architect's fees to have structural and mechanical and electrical and all the plumbing stuff put in there. So there will be additional costs just from the drawings that you'll need to get in there, and it can vary from property to property. So I just talked about engineering added to the plans for construction. So MEP, that's mechanical, electrical, and plumbing.
And so those are just the plans for those systems, not the actual building and hiring of those.
Okay. Correct. But you need those to go into zoning.
Okay. And what's this? We got another snapshot. I say snapshot or picture, which is probably a technical term. What is this we're looking at
so
here?
So I'll go back to the previous slide. So that is the side of my garage and ADU. So the existing garage is on the bottom there. And then we are stacking the ADU on top of it. This is from the yard side. So this is what I'll see from my house. So you've got two man doors on the bottom level there. You got the main man door that goes into the garage. The man door that's underneath the spiral staircase is just a storage unit. And then there's a spiral staircase that goes up to the second floor there. Now, I also have a door on the back of the property that's on the alley. So the idea there is if that's a rental unit, they would use that door. If I have friends and family coming and staying with me, they can hang out my, you know, in the family room in the main house. And then when it's time to go to bed, they can walk across the backyard, go up the spiral staircase.
So in the back, you've got a door on the second floor with another staircase.
It's actually the inside that door in the building, inside the door that you can see right there, inside the spiral staircase, there's stairs that go down inside the unit.
Okay.
To a door that goes out to the alley.
So it's an interior.
It's an interior staircase.
Interior hallway. Yeah. Okay. Correct. Or staircase.
Some of the variances that we're having to go for on this property is the 3-foot setback. So we're in the setback on the second story there. Once again, that property is the original garage is on property line. So the second story is supposed to be inset setback 3 feet. And so we're trying to get a variance to avoid that because we want, you know, that's about 150 square feet we're probably going to lose.
Yeah, if you lose 3 feet on just one side or both sides?
Both sides.
That's a lot of feet to lose.
Yeah. And that building, I think, is close to 25 feet. So, yeah, you're looking at right around, 150 square feet you'd lose out of that unit. And it's a 650 square foot unit.
And what's the layout up top? Studio, one bedroom? What are you doing?
So it's a studio.
Okay.
And the windows there that are on that angled wall are the bedroom. There's a bed right underneath that. And then a living area, the window that's right above the staircase is the bathroom. And then the kitchen's on the backside.
And it's like a full kitchen or
full
a
kitchen.
Small kitchen?
Okay, full so kitchen.
Dishwasher, range, all that stuff?
Yep. Okay. Yep. We're planning on putting gas in this unit, but that's another thing to consider when you're designing this to save a little bit of money. A lot of people are just going electric, so they don't have to deal with running the gas line.
Yeah.
And then there's some French doors on the second level that open up to a Juliet balcony over the alley, and then the stair on the man door on the bottom side, on the back side. So really pretty cool unit. So I'll find out on Friday if we can build it.
Yes. Well, good luck with that, man. Hope that comes through.
So there are some other submittal requirements like the demo plans, if you're demoing anything, and materials, especially if you're going into historic, they're going to want to see all the materials that are being used. You know, in historic districts, they've got requirements, for example, in Curtis Park to use wood clad windows. You can't use the vinyl windows in there. So that increases your cost because you're having to use a higher quality window. Most investors are most likely on their flips putting in vinyl windows.
Yeah. And so is the exterior, is that brick or
it's
is
brick,
that?
Yeah. Okay. So it's existing brick, and then we are going and reclaiming brick. So we're going to be going out to Mendoza Brickyard and selecting a matching sand brick from the time period. And we'll be bringing in all that old brick and using that to build the top. So there will be a little bit of difference. We won't be able to match it perfectly, which is what historic wants. They want to be able to see 100 years down the road, if they look at this building, okay, the bottom was original, the second one was added. But it'll be close enough from a distance you won't be able to tell. It'll still have that old sand brick character to it. So,
and that's going to add some cost to the build out too, is reclaiming bricks, I'd imagine.
It's not. They should be about the same price or less than new brick.
Really?
Yeah. So you're paying anywhere basically from 50 cents to a buck a brick.
Okay.
The reclaimed, I think I've paid 40 cents for some of these sand bricks.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So yeah. And they got really cool character to them. You know, yeah. you could use those bricks to expose some walls inside because some of them come off painted houses. So you get that kind of painted brick effect that's kind of mixed in with the other bricks. So gives it a little more character. So after you get all that stuff done, you're going to be submitting your plans and crossing your fingers and hope that you've done everything correct to get through zoning within hopefully 8 weeks. Depends on the season, depends on their volume. But Denver zoning has added a whole bunch more people up there. They're moving things through faster because of the amount of building that's going on in the city. So
yes, I've heard a few developers complain about that, the speed of things. So they are improving things.
Yes, they are trying to add more staff on. They are trying to improve things and make it easier. And our goal is to continue to work, at least on the ADU side, maybe not all the other development side, but working on the ADU side with the zoning departments to try to make this easier for them, easier for builders to come in, easier for homeowners to get this done, and changing the zoning code to make it easy. That was another thing Washington did. I saw in the article yesterday, they reduced all the fees of building a new home, basically like their... whether it's a sewer tap fee or their connection fees or whatever they are, they reduced it by 50% from what it costs for a normal single family house for the ADU. So they're trying to reduce the expenses for the homeowners to get more of these things built. So that's hopefully we can get somewhere with local zoning departments with those type of incentives for homeowners. So we've already touched on a lot of these factors. Homeowner's response time is a big thing. Experience of the architect, we've already talked about that and this type of design. And then obviously the zoning department and how backed up they are. Arvada, not an issue. You're walking in, talking to the people that are going to be reviewing your stuff. They're extremely excited and it's a pretty friendly, easy process to go through. Denver's much busier and there's a lot more hoops to jump through.
And you know, with the Arvada, I mean, can you go in there with an existing house and have the basement or a different part of the house repurposed as an ADU or rezoned as an ADU?
That's a good question. I have to dig into Arvada and ask them that specific question.
I just ask because I work with a lot of house hackers and we buy a lot in like Arvada, Thornton, but a lot in Arvada. And it's just, hey, if we could, you know, turn the basement into an ADU or something like that, that would just be that'd be so cool.
Yep. Attached ADU.
Okay.
For sure. So I guess that's that slide. We'll go on to some hidden hiccups. Matt, do you want to take over?
Yeah, so I mean, we've kind of touched on this. You know, if you're in a historic district, sometimes you have a couple more hoops to jump to, you know, with the overlays and things like that. And then, you know, uncovering any issues with zoning. And so that things, this kind of being a newer frontier, you know, knowing your zoning, knowing your setbacks, knowing your bulk plan, like these are all things that, you know, come into play when you're looking at, looking at design, building and designing an ADU. And then one of the big ones is, you know, probably not talked about enough is making your neighbors aware because they're the ones that have to stare at this thing after it's built. So, you know, I think getting them on board or making sure they're okay with it is probably a good step in the right direction. Just because you have to live next to them as well. you don't want them scowling at your renters as they're walking back and forth to your ADU. But then discovering deferred maintenance costs, you know, we've talked about some of the variance process to fight it or not. You know, it does add time, money, and effort if you do want to fight that. But if this is truly what you're passionate about doing on your property, then, you know, it may be worth it. And then also, how do you define unnecessary hardships for these variances? So, you know, Jeff has kind of dealt with some of that and he's debated what he was going to do. You want to expand on what you've done, Jeff?
Yeah, and that's a difficult thing. You need to show a true hardship. It can't be like, well, I can make more money if I build a bigger unit, so give me the variance.
Unnecessary hardship is the key word for getting a variance.
So the hardship is you have to prove hardship to get the variance.
Sounds like a good lawyer word that's in the big gray area.
Yeah. So you do have to get a little creative on that to figure out how you are going to present this to the Board of Adjustments to get a variance. And once again, it can't be, well, if you give me this variance, I can get, you know, this much more rent because I have another 150 square feet. They're not going to take that. But going back to talking to your neighbors, making your neighbors aware. There's another neighbor of mine that just sent me a picture of a giant ADU getting built next to him, and he's all fired up, and like neighbors didn't talk to him, and he's like, I'm against ADUs now. And I'm like, no, what are you talking about? Like, and it's because the neighbors didn't do that. So first off, if you're getting variances, you have to get a letter from your neighbors. You don't have to, but that is going to help you get through the variance.
That would help a lot,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
If your neighbors are in support of that. And I'm going to go back a few slides to this one. So this is right on property line. My neighbors have a beautiful courtyard with these koi ponds right on the side of this wall. So they came and they said, you know, we don't want siding. We like the brick. We want it to continue to brick. So that was a request on theirs. They didn't want siding. So I said, yeah, that's fine. I'll put brick on there. And then I even offered to, if you look at the light fixtures there, so some sconces. I went to them and I said, hey, you guys want a couple sconces to light your courtyard? I'll pay for the electricity and we'll put them on a light sensor. So it'll just light up your courtyard at night, and I'll let you pick them and I'll install them. So I obviously have a very good relationship with my neighbors, but
that's the type of thing you should do. Is like trying to make it a win-win for them. And
how can I make this better for you? So
I don't know why more people have that attitude. It's so simple. Things get so much better.
And so that could potentially slow you down on, or could potentially not slow you down by having your neighbors try and battle you on that stuff. Because remember, you have to go to public hearings for your variances.
And they could come there historic. And be an ally or a very vocal enemy, I would assume.
Exactly.
And so I want to just ask a question about historic districts. I just don't know the stats, but like, I mean, how many neighborhoods are labeled historic in Denver?
There's a bunch of them, and there'll be more being added on. I don't know the number of them, but you see the signs all over the place.
Yeah,
you're now in Curtis Park Historic District. You know, like Five Points has their, that's more of like a cultural district because of all the jazz that was on Welton Street. But San Clemente Historic District, they're all over the place.
Yeah.
Baker Historic District, I mean, they're all over the place. So, and a lot of people don't know. When I first moved in, I wasn't paying attention to historic stuff. That wasn't some, your realtor will do you justice by telling you, hey, just so you know, this isn't a historic district.
Yes.
So if you decide to modify the house, doing any additions, it adds another level of steps to go through that process. So I was not told that by my realtor. I don't even think she knew. So, and then you go ahead and start doing stuff, and then you get a notice from the city, hey, you can't do this to your property. You can't change the look from the sidewalk is basically, you cannot change the look from the sidewalk of the property. So yeah, but I think if you can, talking to your neighbors and you're uncovering all this stuff, the deferred maintenance could be huge. You know, maybe you anticipate on using that garage again, but that garage is in such disrepair that there's no way, and that just totally changes that. So
are you actually going to park a car in your old carriage house now garage?
Yeah, I actually have two cars in there right now.
Okay.
And we will continue to park cars in there. So, and there's not a parking requirement in Denver. They haven't seen an issue with it yet. But that is one of the NIMBY things is, oh, there's going to be all these extra cars here. And if you really look at the demographic of people that are moving into here, a lot of them don't have cars.
Yeah.
And they're in dense areas that are near light rail and other modes of transportation. And you know, they're your 30-somethings that are not totally settled yet, but
yeah, they take light rail, Ubers, and those annoying scooters all over the place.
Yep. And, you know, the city of Denver thinks in the next 15 years, there's gonna be less vehicles. And that's kind of where they're planning right now, which is, some people do not like that because it seems like they are planning for something that may or may not even happen. And they're not addressing the changes now or the needs now, which is a lot of congestion and too many cars. But I think we'll probably get going in that direction. It's interesting. You know, you look at the Five Points neighborhood, and yes, it's getting more dense. And a lot of the old timers that have lived there for a long time, you know, they've lived there in the house for 30 years or so, and they've seen the neighborhood change drastically. The fact of the matter is it's not as dense as it was in the 50s.
Really?
There's more cars because, you know, if a family had a car, they probably had one car. It was a gigantic grocery getter, but everybody's got a car. So there's definitely more cars, but the actual population for humans is not as dense as it was in the 1950s. So you see people that do complain about that, but they're not necessarily accurate when it comes to that. So, We already touched on financing on the last one, and there'll be a whole nother slide on that. But once again, your HELOC, cash, construction, refi, standalone second, or the land loan, and then build. There will be some areas that have some infill lots that you could go in there with an ADU design. And in certain neighborhoods that are pro ADU, you probably would get a better response by building the ADU than you would. So I know in like Curtis Park, there's going to be some infill lots available. That
a better response, not from the financing, but from the
neighborhood.
From the neighborhood, okay,
Yep. So that's where I was saying the land loan could be a potential there.
Okay, and at what point in the process, because I know, I mean, you know, just buying an investment property or house in general, financing is such a critical component that, you know, let's face it, very few people want to spend time on that, but it's probably the thing that they need to spend the most time on. When do you start getting the financing even figured out and lined up in this process? Because that's a big domino or a big potential hurdle.
Yeah, I would do it right away.
Okay, even before conceptual drawings or at that same time?
Yeah, at the same time. I mean, if you're doing the conceptual drawings, you're like, yeah, I'm not so sure I want to do this. You know, I'll decide later, then maybe you don't do it then. But I would say make the contact. We got some contacts that we can put people in touch with that are offering some of these products.
Okay.
But yeah, I would start right in the beginning. You know, it can take a long time. You want to know if you're going to be able to do it too, right? So if you have a little bit of cash to get some of those small things going, kind of test the waters, like get the conceptual going and whatnot, that probably doesn't need the loan necessarily.
Yeah.
But I would recommend getting it going right away, because once you have all this stuff done, you want to be able to build, right? And pull the trigger. So,
but I think along with that, it also, you know, if this is just a conceptual idea and you're like, well, I'm zoned for it, so should I do it or do I want to do it? I think that's a big thing. You know, starting to get findings before that seems silly, but, you know, we have a couple of people that are getting conceptual drawings right now to see if this is something that is going to look right on their property or feel right, or, you know, if they just think this is the right thing for their, you know, home ownership. So, you know, they're going to spend that $1,000 to get that conceptual rendering, and then they're going to figure out the financing after that. But with that said, it's also, they're not in a hurry. So if you're in more of a hurry because, you know, your in-laws are going to move in the next year, you know, I think getting your financing in order sooner rather than later is better, because HELOCs take, you know, on a short term, 3 to 4 weeks. So, you know, with that said, that just adds to the, you know, permitting and design timeline that we've talked about. So, you know, I think it depends on your timeline and how quickly you want to move. But also, you know, just seeing if it's even a possibility. Is pretty, you know, maybe one of the hurdles getting a HELOC, depending on how much equity you have in your house or how much cash you have, or, so varies project to project, person to person. With that said, it just adds time and money and effort. So, you know, maybe checking into that options before you buy anything conceptual, maybe your option, but it's up to you and how gung ho you are on actually adding an ADU.
You know, and the one other thing about the HELOC is you get the long sum and then you're paying interest on it right away. So if you do a construction finance, you're going to be draw it out. So, you know, they're not going to give you all the money right away. So your contractor is going to have to meet certain goals and then they'll get the second draw going. So there could be a benefit with that too.
So really just have to come down to crunch the numbers, run scenarios and see what makes the most sense. Yeah. And that is why, I mean, I always say with investing, it sounds like even more so, I'll go back to my broken record, make sure you work with a loan officer that knows the stuff, because they can save you a lot of headache and time and frustrations. I mean, we see it all the time when we buy house hacks, investment properties, and it's not nearly as complex as this, a lot fewer moving parts. It makes life so much easier, especially if we submit offers, we get more accepted because we've got a lender who's an A-plus lender, knows the game, everything's lined up. So yeah, get this figured out.
Yeah. So advocacy, write your city planning department, go to planning board meetings. Once again, sign up for our newsletter at youradu.com. Our Colorado ADU meetup on Meetup, Colorado ADU Backyard Property Investors, and then tune in for our next webinars. You can also attend the next city council public hearing and vote for Blueprint Denver is coming up on Monday, April 22nd at 5:30 p.m. the Denver City and County Building, 1437 Bannock Street, in the city council chambers. If you can't make it to that, you can send an email to blueprint at denvergov.org, telling them why you support ADU recommendations that are in Blueprint Denver, why you want to see more ADUs available more broadly in Denver, and to support Blueprint Denver adoption ASAP. And if you weren't on the last webinar, Blueprint Denver is the next 20-year plan for the city. Planning comes before zoning. There are recommendations to expand the implementation and the zoning availability for ADUs across the city. And that plan is supposed to be adopted very soon. There's some people that want to delay it, but we want it adopted right away. It's been a 3-year plan, so there's been plenty of time to make comments and suggestions on it. But that's what you can do to help advocate and move these things forward. And we'll continue to work. Once this goes through, Blueprint Denver goes through, and they know that they're going to start working on zoning changes, we want to be right there alongside making recommendations and working with the city to get the zoning so it's easier, especially since these are homeowner developers that don't have experience with working with zoning departments.
And of course, you guys got a meetup here as well. Is that a monthly meetup or what's your frequency?
Yeah, we're doing them monthly is the goal. We are skipping May because Matt will be out of town, but we'll be doing one. We're going to move different cities too.
So different neighborhoods every time, huh?
So the goal with that will be all to jump around. So we're going to do Curtis Park. We did Curtis Park back in March. We're doing the Highlands on April 16th at Call to Arms Brewery at 5:30 p.m. And you can find that on our meetup group at meetup.com. And that's Colorado ADU Backyard Property Investors is the name of that meetup. And we'll be touring an ADU after that meetup. And then we're looking at June 11th as the tentative date for an Arvada one. And we'll tour an ADU at that meetup as well.
Very cool. All right. Well, I'll put all these links in the show notes as well. Again, we got lots of information, lots of resources, lots of dates, lots of webinars. Guys, go to denverinvestmentrealestate.com/ADU. And as we also have teased out, all the links and all the notes will be put there. Jeff and Matt, any final things before we close out episode 2 of our 9-part series?
I don't think so. Cool. Thanks so much.
We'll have more if you got more thoughts.
Yeah.
Cool, guys. Once again, like I just appreciate you guys' time. I appreciate the prep work. Appreciate you sharing the knowledge. Because I know all this ADU stuff, it is an uphill battle. So I'm really digging the stuff you're sharing. I look forward to doing lots more content with you guys. So thank you.
Excellent. Thank you so much.